Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Emily Meredith and I'm here with Sarah McEwling and the fantastic authors of Swarm, well, two of them, Margot Lanigan and Deborah Biancotti.
Hooray!
Hi!
Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Now, I'm sort of still recovering from the ending of Swarm, and I have some feelings.
But we're not going to talk about
that. Can we help you with those?
Well, I mean, I don't think anything's going to help except the third book, so there's probably nothing you can do. But yeah, I feel like maybe the book should come with a warning, like intense
cliffhangery
ending. Do you ever, like, when you're, you know, deciding how to end the book, do you ever just feel, you know, evil?
Yes, but I enjoy that feeling.
There is definitely an element of calculation that goes into it. Yeah, what's really going to knock people for six at the end? Yeah.
I think we were cheering when we came up with that one. I feel like we all kind of did a bit of a high five. And
it was pretty perfect. It was pretty perfectly painful.
It definitely hit me hard.
Should we talk about the beginning?
Good
to eat. I went straight to the end.
Yes.
It's powerful. It's a powerful ending. Sticks with you. But the beginning. We've got new zeros, new powers. Okay, let's talk about those.
Yeah, well, we only have two fresh powers, and but they're enough to disrupt what the six powers that we know are up to, which is basically having a good time with their powers in a limited sort of a way in Canberra, running their own nightclub, and then these two strangers come to town and check things up rather nastily one evening, and sort of announce that there is more happening beyond Canberra's borders than Darzio's really want to think about.
They're not even the big bad.
Yeah, the prelude to the big bad.
That's right,
they're just kind of the forerunners of the big bad.
BTW, you think we're bad? Check the guy behind us.
It was very scary. This book is a lot scarier.
Much darker.
Like,
yes.
Painful and scary. And
there are just so many feelings that I'm still reeling. I don't know how to talk about this book without wanting to cry a little bit.
I didn't enjoy it.
No, we definitely enjoyed this book.
Enjoyed it.
It's not... You know, sometimes you can be a bit worried about a sequel, that it's not going to live up to the action of the first. This is not one of those books.
Yeah, we sort of took it to the extreme. Like, book one, we were all about what could the powers be and what would suck about them. And book two was like, no, what would really, really suck about them? So we kind of aimed at that, I think, book two.
Yeah.
We just screwed up everyone's lives as
best
we could.
That's right. It's what worse circumstances can we throw at everyone?
And their Christmas holidays.
Yeah.
Christmas is destroyed.
We refer to that as a very zeros Christmas, that whole sequence, and I loved writing those chapters. Scott got sick of them, but man, I could have written another five or six.
There were many ways to mess up Christmas when you've got superpowers.
Oh, was one of you particularly dark?
Yeah, who goes to the
extreme?
Yeah. Or is that just a collective?
We sort of just dare each other to go darker, I think it was. Because you were getting pretty dark anyway. Remember that time Scott walked in and said, and this will happen, and we went, oh yeah, and just wrote it the heck down before any of us forgot. Like, we didn't even query it. It was just like the darkest, most horrible thing
that
we could imagine.
Yeah, we're all
please tell me we've done that.
Did we experience that already?
Within the confines of book two, you have experience. We could come up with. But you haven't started book three yet.
That's right. Yeah, we hope to render you incapable of breathing.
Yes.
Fingers crossed.
It'll just be on the podcast, it'll just be people sobbing.
That's right.
Like, are you guys okay?
But enjoying it so much. Like,
it's just
enjoying the hell out of those tears.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, you guys keep secret who writes which character. I'm assuming that we will have to wait until the series is over to find out who wrote which character.
I'm assuming too.
I would have thought we'd probably tell people for the last book.
Oh, do you think so?
Yeah.
Maybe after the last book is cooler.
Yeah. You think?
I don't know. We'll see how we feel.
Yeah. You should have a competition.
Yeah.
Because my spreadsheet will then be very useful.
Emily has a spreadsheet where we have gathered clues to try and figure out.
People will have had three books to gather the clues. And can put it all together.
Yeah. There should be a competition. But what could you win? A future with
the
no
book.
Bad house.
We'll think of something.
Then it has to be...
There'll be some kind of...
I love how we're arranging... We're going to handle the marketing. And it's a definitely a trilogy at this stage. Okay. Yeah. All right, because I don't know if I could go through another cliffhanger ending like the one in Saw. Which sounds, I mean, it sounds like you're saying a lot of negative things here, but it's gloriously, spectacularly painful and agonizing.
Emily's just nodding. Like, I just need to get through this podcast and I'll be okay. It's kind of nodding.
Can we talk a bit about the process of co-authoring? Mm-hmm. So, like, I know you all have your characters that you write, but how does it work? Do you just... do you write a chapter and then share it and then someone writes the next chapter? Or?
No, we come together and plot it out and allot the action to the different characters so we know how the chapters fall, so we know what chunk of action we're dealing with. So we can, it's like one of those party games where somebody draws the head of the monster and puts the joins in.
Yeah.
And then you fold it over in the person without knowing what's on the other side. So you can start anywhere because you know roughly where that the person before you's chapter was supposed to end and roughly where yours is supposed to end. So then we can all go off separately and throw things at our chapters and then we come back together.
And share them.
And share them. Well, what we do is we send them to Scott, basically, because he's always so late there.
And not he even here.
He has to slot his chapters in. And in the course of doing that, he often does sort of running repairs to things that have suddenly been added or suddenly dropped out or been changed or been written in a different way to what he expected.
So has anyone
And then
ever...
we squabble with what he does and say, no, I didn't want that to happen that way. And then negotiate like grown-ups.
Yes, that's exactly what we do. Like grown-ups.
Negotiate like grown-ups.
Like, we are not actually grown-ups.
But we can act like them sometimes, certain times.
Yes.
So did anyone ever go away to write their part and then just come back with a game changer that no one ever expected?
Scott did.
Yes.
Okay.
Scott did, yeah.
We were more obedient than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what happened, wasn't it? When we wrote, we tended to start off fairly... we'd sort of stick to the plan quite solidly.
I would, definitely.
Yeah, just because that was all we had to go on. Mm. And then Scott would come back and say, why don't we try this? And try this?
Yeah.
Try this? And
this
we'd
plan
say, oh, right.
Work.
And we would sort of take courage from his approach and be a bit more adventurous in the latter drafts. So...
but also you don't want to step on anyone's toes. That's why
right.
I would stick to the plan.
Yeah,
so someone is expecting me to finish my character stuff here, so I will.
Yeah.
And Scott would walk in and go, well, this plan doesn't make sense.
That's right.
And I'd be like, well, you were there for it, buddy. So I don't know. What do you want me to do with that feedback?
So he's the wild card is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, wild card. Yeah. We do what we're told, and then we find out that's the wrong thing to do. And then, I don't know.
Well, and mostly things get better from being stirred up and pushed.
Yes,
further.
It's true. Yeah.
Like when we'll have our initial meeting, and then we will have a second and sometimes a third meeting down, and things will have shifted. You know, the ground will have shifted under our feet with each of those meetings, and by the third meeting, it's quite a different book from the one
which is true, I think, because always your first ideas are never as good as your final ideas, and it's true even when you're planning together, because we plan together and we'd say, well, this could happen, and then we kind of build on those ideas, trying to come up with a final idea in that plan, but actually when the words are in front of you, you can see that there's a better way to do it, so I just think there's probably...
Yeah, or you can see that the thing that you're all striving really hard to do is a pile of rubbish and it's just not going to work, and you have to think of something else completely different.
Or a gap that you just didn't see coming at all.
Yeah.
Then you try to slot two chapters together and you're like, oh, this doesn't work.
Mm.
I imagine that would be hard as well when you're dealing with powers and superpowers. Did you ever have a moment where you're like, oh, the thing we want to do won't work because of the powers
we've created? The number of times we've turned to each other and said, but she can't because she's blind.
Yeah.
Like, even in the book.
Yes.
She's out in the middle of nowhere. She can't look at her phone. There's nobody else there with her.
Yeah.
That must be so hard to keep track of.
Yeah, so we still make stupid mistakes with the powers.
And how do you rate the experience of co-writing to writing alone? Like, what are the differences or... has co-writing affected how you write alone?
Yes, it's completely stopped me in my...
Unfortunately. We're not writing anymore.
I've written some short stories, but it's been like getting blood out of stone. Because I don't have any friends helping me.
Oh. So you're at this stage you're preferring co-authoring?
Yeah, well, I think just that sitting around and brainstorming, which is just what you can't do with your own things. Yeah, if you don't have a sounding board and you get into the habit of having a sounding board, then all of a sudden it's just this empty space around you, not giving back ideas, not laughing at what you say so that you think of something better.
The laughing's a thing. Like nowadays with my solo work, I try to make myself laugh. Yeah. And that's my sign of success. If I have made myself laugh, and there may be no one else in the world with the same humour as me, that is entirely possible. But I sit there and I make these plans for, you know, a solo work I'm doing at the moment, and I'm just sitting there chuckling all the way through it. I'm like, oh my God, this will never sell, but it is hilarious.
So yeah. I think the quantity of laughter is probably the outward sign, the most difference between collaborating and working alone. Because
so were you laughing this time about the pain you were going to cause?
Absolutely.
Yes. Evil, oh my God. Comic
and in fact,
we were
pushing it even further and more stupid so that, you know, people would,
It's hard with this book because there are a lot of questions I would like to ask that we can't ask without ruining the story. But, yeah, and that goes for my questions about the next book as well.
I'm interested, which of the powers do you think is the most useful that your characters possess?
That's an interesting question.
Well, it's very situational. Like Scam's power with the voice is really useful in a lot of situations and really a liability in others. But it's probably quite flexible because it's, you know, if you're a very selfish person, it's the perfect power for you because it gets you what you want. Mm-hmm. It manipulates people for you. But then I also like Flickers where she can just sort of peer through, you know, literally see things through other people's eyes. That would be a really useful thing to have.
I love that moment where she can work out if anyone else in the house is awake yet, because she can just pop into their eyeballs and all their eyelids are closed, so they're still sleeping. It's like, well, that no reason to get up then. Do you know? Like, that would be a nice practical power.
I think Shazara's power would be the most useful. I mean, controlled. Yeah. It would be, like, if you mastered it, it would be...
Because you've always wanted to crash a cop shop, is that why?
Yeah, that's an ambition of mine.
Oh, I'd just always like to
close control
down.
The machines. Yeah. I think it would be cool. Yeah. I think of all the ATMs I would visit.
There you go.
Yeah. Your book has me thinking like an evil villain.
Perfect. They're all slightly villainous. God love them. God love their cotton socks.
They have good intentions.
Well, some of them do.
Some of them just after their own self-aggrandizement.
I find Scam's power an interesting one to talk about, though, because it does... Obviously, it seems like the voice is like a separate entity, but it can't really be. It has to be part of him. It's like, how... Is that something... Can we talk about, is that something you might explore? Like, how much of the voice is really Scam and how much is... How separate are they, really?
I don't know that all three of us even agree on the answer to that one, actually.
I think that's going to be, we're going to be exploring
that's
that in book
That's a book three question as well. Come back to us after book three.
Yeah, because there is this, just to phrase this in a non-spoilery way, there is like a moment where the difference between Scam's power versus everyone else's power is really highlighted in this book, and it makes you more curious about exactly how it works and what it is.
Well, hold that thought
for, you know, a long, long time.
More hilarity coming in book three.
I just, maybe if I can just, like, not think about the book for a year, then it will just be like, oh,
there you go.
Here it is.
I really liked how, right at the beginning of the book, you've given them a safe place for them all to be themselves, and there's, like, a place where they can use their powers in a safe, controlled manner.
I liked that too. Which one? Probably that's not too spoilery.
It's not
kind of talk about
that's
that.
The beginning.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We didn't mention that.
The dish.
The dish. Why? How did you decide to?
Scott thought it'd be cool. I remember that. I remember him just saying when I was a teenager, I wanted my own space, and therefore my characters will get their own space.
Yeah.
And so we built the petri dish.
Yeah.
He said he didn't have
a space when he was young, and they just a lot of this really crappy space that they called their own. And they still loved it because it was their space. Yeah. There were no distinguishing features about it, but it was theirs. So
at one point, we all tried to draw a floor plan of the
people. Oh, wow.
Because we were trying to sort of choreograph our scenes. We were just walking across rooms that weren't there and looking the wrong way.
Yeah. There was all that thing about the light switch or whatever it was
that
someone had to turn on and off, and that was in a completely different spot in various chapters.
Yeah.
God, that must be hard to keep track of. Yeah. I didn't even think about that kind of thing.
Yeah, the things you just assume.
You would all have a different dish.
Everybody knows where Helen Olsen's set out. It's that one that I know in such and such, but no, it's that one that's got knows in such and such.
Yeah.
Now the one that didn't.
Mm-hmm. I just imagine it like a big, huge space with a mezzanine level.
Bingo. That's all I had in my head as well. Yeah. Yes. That's all you needed, except for the light switch. Yeah. You also needed to know where that was.
You need to know that. Yeah. You're going to have various characters running around.
If there's
around.
Any action around the
and the back door. The back door move position a couple of times. Yeah. I remember that, actually. When Flicker has to run out the back door, I remember it being in a
I always had it over there behind the bar. I don't know what you people were talking
about. In my head, it's still not over there behind the bar.
I know. Your own version is a bit sticky, isn't it?
Yeah. It's fluid. It's just the junction box appears when you need it. Not any other
That's
point.
Right. It's like not Narnia. There.
Well, it's the sort of thing as well that readers might not notice, but you have to get it right.
But someone will.
Someone
will.
One
person in fictional Cambria who will actually go, wait a second, this is not real Cambria, and that is not where a junction box goes.
What it'll usually be will be an American copy editor.
Yes.
I notice it, who has its mania for getting things consistent, even things that in real life never stay consistent. Yeah, that's always an interesting stage.
This is probably a question with a really obvious answer because I know who I think it is, but like, who do you think has the worst power? Like, the one you definitely would never want?
See, I would not want Crash's power.
Yeah, I think
I would not want that power. That just seems irritating.
In the modern world, I mean, it's just getting harder and harder for her to function in the modern world with so much electronics around her. Although, you know, she's learning to be able to balance it a bit with the fixing and the crashing. So, but it does, you know, necessarily involve some destruction to make her immune to the pain of living in the modern world.
Yeah.
So it always throws her into the most interesting moral quandaries, which are good for a story, but for real life.
I guess I only want her power if I have total control over her.
You can never fly anywhere. You can never trust yourself to fly anywhere.
Yeah.
No, she can't go to hospitals, things like that.
Has an effect on her personal life and her emotions.
Mm-hmm. And she's a very moral character. Like, she's probably the most upstanding.
Yeah. So we needed one.
In so much.
A bit of a conscience.
She's the moral compass.
Yeah.
She is.
Yeah. Which is great. I think she's got some great lines in book three.
So you thought the question was obvious.
I thought it was obvious. I would never want to have Tebow's power. Because it seems so painful, especially in this book.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. You should just suck it up and get over it.
Well, I mean,
it's easy for you to say, not forgettable girl.
Everyone remembers you. I just think that would be the most heartbreaking.
It sort of would be, but then it also plays to that sort of Groundhog Day-ish thing where, you know, you can sneak in anywhere, you can learn anything, you can have anything, you can take anything without fear of being caught. There are all sorts of good opportunities. You can do immense amounts of good in the world, Sarah.
I hear what you're saying, but that's more. And I just feel... It would be a
You're
hard
talking
power
to girls
to have.
Like villains.
That's true.
They don't it's good.
Yeah.
God, how boring.
But I think the great thing about this one is they all like have powers that are not necessarily what you would want to have. This makes it interesting.
Mm. Well, we were trying to come up with powers that would have a sucky side.
Mm.
Do you know? That's the thing. So in actual fact, when you sit down and think, oh, a voice that could get me anything I want, actually sounds pretty good. So then you have to sit there and ask yourself, well, how would that suck?
Mm. And if you give these to teens who haven't really worked out what are sensible things to want, then it's, you know, you're just handing it to somebody who's going to blow it up in your face.
So they all have a bad side, I think, and a good side if you can work out how to work them that way.
And they're starting to learn how to work together,
which
I thought was really interesting in this book, how all these powers can kind of combine to create a really cool... nightclub, for example.
But then, of course, different stressors are applied, and they get cranky with each other. And I quite like the way that they're not the most homogenous group.
No,
they're always a little bit loose and inclined to snap at each other and
And you have love complications.
Oh, yeah, there's
always with the group.
As well.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This one was a good book for
it
romance.
It was great. And this coming from the girl who doesn't like romance,
Ray.
I really liked the relationship stuff that happened in this one.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes.
That's quite an endorsement.
I'm a bit of a sap, so I'm always going to be on board if there's anyone crushing on anyone. But yeah, that was really good in this book. I'm interested to see where things go. Well, guys, thank you so, so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you, guys.
And causing us immense amounts of pain. Oh. We've been fantastic.
Thank you for that.
Happy to traumatise.
We'll be back next year. Something even more traumatic.
Oh, goodness. I can't take it. It has to end well. Please.
Uh-oh.
Oh, God.
Be prepared for next year's podcast of an hour's worth of sobbing.
I'm going to have to, like, take time off work.
So thanks to Margot Lanigan and Deborah Biancotti for coming in. You can buy their fantastic book, Swarm, and the first one, Zeros, from your local bookstore or online at Booktopia.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.